Hi, this is Robert Rickover. I'm an Alexander Technique teacher in Lincoln, Nebraska. I also teach regularly in Toronto, Canada. Today, my guest is Bob Leda, an Alexander Technique teacher in the Boston area. Bob has been a teacher for, I believe, almost 30 years now. And Bob, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Robert. It's just grand to be here.
Well, this is our second conversation in a week or so.
Right.
As I mentioned, Bob's been teaching a long time. And like I think a lot of teachers who've been teaching for a few decades, he's kind of done a little reevaluation of why he's teaching and what he wants to teach. And he's come up with some pretty interesting ideas that I think are will be of interest to other teachers and students and trainees. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we get into that, Bob, could you give your super short description of the Alexander Technique?
Okay, that I can do. It's very, very short. Our terrain, the place where we work, is with how you do what you do and who you are when you do it. And these days, I'm starting to spend more time on who you are than exactly how you go about things.
Okay, and could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, the part of it gets to how I believe we live in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's different now because we're doing this interview during pandemic times. So we're not sort of exposed to the chaos of the topsy-turvy world as much as things have been true before. But I'd like to be an active and compassionate participant in the present. And active is part of that because I do want to not just be buffeted around by things that I feel like I have no chance to have any control over, and compassionate just because I think that's the right way to live. Everything in our world is changing moment to moment to moment, and if we can be as available as possible to respond completely to those moment to moment to moment changes, I think our life is easier. And I believe that it's funny to say, but that we'll be better citizens as well. So that's sort of where I'm at these days.
And I agree with you. These are unusual times that make what you're talking about even more pertinent, let's say.
Mm, yeah.
How does that way of thinking affect how you teach the technique? I assume you're teaching primarily online these days.
These days, yes.
Yeah, but even back, you know, at some point, maybe live customers will show up, but for now, online. How does that affect how you approach teaching a lesson and what your goals are when you're teaching?
Yeah, can I take a little time to go into what's happening in your brain?
Sure.
As things are going on.
Mm-hmm.
We, our brain here, our first job is to survive, and with that, to thrive. And I think Alexander work is in the and thrive part of that. Our brains are very conservative, and they're very excellent at detecting changes in patterns, things that are different. Because things that are different could potentially be threatening for us. So we see, oh, over there, over there. Oh, I got to watch out for that. You know, that kind of thing. So we hone in on anomalies. When you look at movement, the anomaly is usually some sort of holding or grabbing or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those anomalies are there, yeah, but they're on top of the fact that you're alive and flowing all the time. And in the way I teach, I don't care so much about the anomalies. I care more about tuning into that flow, living in it and taking advantage of it. So rather than saying no to a holding, it's yes to a flow and see what happens. So it's really curiosity based as well.
So I do because that the former approach, saying no to a holding, is a pretty traditional Alexander idea, right?
It is.
The idea that we have these inherent abilities, but we're squashing them a little by creating excess tension in our body. And you're saying, it sounds like what you're saying, tell me if I'm wrong, that you're wanting to emphasize the stuff that's doing well and letting that out, and or encouraging that, and then perhaps that holding will diminish. Is that the
I found that to be true. And it's I think it's a question of how do you respond when you notice a holding? You know, you can respond by saying no, or you can respond by saying yes to something else. And I'm traveling down that second path.
Okay, that's an important distinction between, I would say, how most Alexander teachers approach things.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what I found is really interesting stuff, Robert. What I found is that these holdings, you said it very nicely, excess tension. So it's a wave of energy that's come up. That came from somewhere, and it's probably your unconscious telling you, oh, you need a little more to accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish. Then it gets confused, right? And you get this grabbing or something. Well, if we can let the student go even more into the holding and let the driving force that led to it follow through, finish, and culminate in whatever was happening, usually things untie themselves. So we go more into the holding to let it resolve and satisfy whatever need had it come into being in the first place. It's very fascinating stuff.
So would you perhaps suggest to a student who notices a little, let's say, neck tension, that would be a pretty common thing,
right,
to actually increase that tension a little bit to see, to learn more about it? Or
I go at it a slightly differently. That might be the effect. I try to get them to be as descriptive as possible around this tension. Does it have a shape? Does it have a border? Does this shape change? Then a critical question, does it have a trajectory? Is it going from here to there? If it is, can you follow that trajectory and where is it going to lead you? And what I've seen happening is that it will go, I know the neck one for you is very near and dear just because of the circumstances you had through here. That can say, oh, this is really trying to lead me to here, which is trying to lead me to here, to there, and what was excessive and trapped becomes balanced out in a fuller sense of you, and the motivation behind the tension becomes more evident. And that's usually a very good thing for the student to have this motivation be revealed.
Well, that's an interesting approach. I have to say I have not employed that myself.
You're in a big group.
I can see how that that could work. It's maybe you could think of it as an even more indirect but more powerful way of dealing with those.
I think that's well said. I mean, the thing with tension and pain and all of that, you know, people want to run away from it. And Yes, yeah, so you come in with a frozen shoulder. Well, don't ask me about my shoulder, you know, and you would work from why. How your shoulder? Oh, don't ask me about my shoulder because I'll go right back into the pain again. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, pain hurts. But that's all it does. And if you can not really befriend, but at least live with your pain in a way that you acknowledge its usefulness as well, mm-hmm. things change and evolve. And it's, like I say, it's very fascinating to me how this happens. I've experienced this myself just because of a lot of things that I've been through and try to share this with others. But it is counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm. So when you go to teach a lesson, do you have some biases of your own that you bring to that teaching?
Oh, of course.
Conscious biases.
Of course.
And
of
what
course.
What would those biases be?
Well, like I, you know, I teach from yes and rather than no but. You mm-hmm. know, the so I do emphasize that. And I try to live what I'm saying, you know, rather than being sort of a broadcaster and say, do this, do that, do something else. My own background was fairly rigorous scholastically and very analytical. And I also do a lot of athletic things. What those have in common is that they are ruthless in trying to get to minimum kind of solutions. You know, so to get out of the way and let your inner wisdom take over has proven to be the right path for me. So I encourage that during a lesson as well. The other thing which can be, it's funny, this one can be off-putting. I think it's a lesson is a collaboration. It's not so much that I teach, but it's more that the student learns. And yes, I bring a body of knowledge to it, but the student brings a body of knowledge to a lesson as well. And they're their own subject matter experts, not me. You know, so I try to collaborate rather than being an authority. And for some people, that's tough to take, you know, and because some people do like to say, be told it's this way, go about it, improve at it, you know, you'll be well. So collaboration, minimum solutions, particularly efficient. I took sick a bunch of years ago, so I had to learn that as well. And we're more than just our bodies. We're more than just physical. So the physical can be a path in, and you can affect awareness, spirituality, all of that. But you can have awareness as a path in, and you can affect the physical. So we go with what works best for the person.
So a couple of sort of basic Alexander ideas that are out there are primary control and inhibition. Okay. And I wonder if you could very briefly just explain what each of those are and how they fit in with your approach to teaching.
Yeah, this is one where I do disagree with the path that Alexander took. Mm-hmm. Primary control, the words I'm using these days are primary relationship. I was using primary movement for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it's what's up with your head and your spine. And if I'll put it in pedantic terms first and then practical ones. If you can have an open and dynamic relationship between your head and your spine, the deeper that is, the better off you are. In practical terms, it means that if your head and your spine are allowed to rebalance with each other constantly, this is a good thing. Yep. We have two reasons for that rebalancing to happen. One is the fact that your head is front weighted, there's more of your head in front of the place where it pivots, which is between your ears, than behind. So it's going to tend to do this kind of toppling all the time.
Right.
So that asks you to rebalance. The second thing is that you're breathing. So your ribs are doing this all the time. We're constantly changing shape. Your diaphragm is doing that. Mm-hmm. We're constantly changing shape. So your ribs and diaphragm and spine, they're all connected with each other. Your spine is constantly changing shape. So you have to rebalance, and they rebalance with each other. That put in a sentence is, if you can move from the inside out rather than the outside in, mm-hmm. something happens, and there's much more room for yourself, and it's much easier to breathe and to live and to move and to do everything. Mm-hmm. Inhibition. This is a really funny one. Alexander's model was one that's called stimulus response, for all of you who've been exposed to that. And in his book, Use of the Self, chapter Evolution of the Technique, there's a sentence when he talks about voluntarily speaking, when I receive the stimulus to speak. That at its base, I don't think he thought that through as completely as he could. If I'm going to do something, I'll use raising my hand as an example, and I'm going to raise my right hand whenever I feel like it. So I've done this. The stimulus to move my right arm reached my consciousness at a particular time, but there's been a whole lot of unconscious activity that happened before then. And there's been a lot of studies done that measure brain activity, and you look at electrical pulses and all of that, and they can predict when you're going to move your arm before you realize when you're going to move your arm. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. worth to sort of confirm now.
Yep.
So we can't say that the stimulus happens when it reaches our consciousness, but when it reaches our consciousness, we can intervene. Because we can, I'll go ahead and raise my arm in his three choices. I'll choose not to. And his methodology was to go through directions. Mm-hmm. Or we can do something completely different.
Right.
Making one of those choices is what I feel inhibition is. But the choice I would make is none of those three. It mm-hmm. would be, listen to that flow that you have because you're alive and see what happens. And you may choose to move your arm, you may not. But it's to tap into that river and let that affect what you do. So if for me, inhibition is consciously trying to influence your use. It's a conscious intervention. But I don't feel like it's conscious control. Does that make sense the way I was saying it, Robert?
Yeah, the word control, I do think is a little, I've always thought was a little iffy. Yeah. But for example, I mean, the example you just gave, you raising your arm. Hmm. A lot of times, just as an example, say working with as an Alexander teacher, working with a musician, for example, yeah. and there are certain passages when they get to are challenging, mm-hmm. and you can kind of just see the little tightening that goes on when they get yeah. there. So yeah. one strategy, and I think this might be related to what you're talking about, is what I will say is what you know ahead of time when you're about to get there. So when you're about to get there, project a little direction like I'm free or something like that ahead of time. Or when you're walking and you notice that when you come down more heavily on your feet than you think is desirable, you could put out that direction just before the foot arrives at the ground, which to a certain extent takes care of that problem you mentioned, which is, in fact, the signals go out before you're aware of them.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
So
I
you
agree
could jump ahead of that and just say, well, this here, I could just use a useful direction even before the problem occurs.
Yes. Oh, I agree 100%. For those of you who are teachers in training, or you know, that's means whereby, as was the terminology that Alexander used for that.
Right.
The one I use is I move up through the center of the top of my head, so it's just a word up.
Well, they're different, you know, there are many, yeah, many Alexander directions,
right,
out there. And So I wonder, do you think this would be a good time to bring this conversation to a close, or is there something we haven't covered that would be important to add?
Yeah, I think there's one more thing. When you,
sure.
Because we're biased to notice these holdings and that sort of thing. Well, why do they occur? My feeling is that they're fear-based one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And our most fundamental fear is fear of falling. And so we're mm-hmm. faced with this tremendous paradox living on the earth, because there's gravity, which heads us towards our support below us. But when we head towards the earth, oh, that's falling. Right. So to become comfortable with being supported by what's below us so that we can move up through ourselves mm-hmm. is a very deep subject, and it touches things that are so primitive, so wired inside of us. But if you can get there and accept that you're supported by the external environment as well as internally, you'll be less prone to try to do it by yourself. So yeah, there's always a fear factor, and
sure.
We can work through that.
I would add to that, and I think this fits in with your general idea of teaching from yes, that we have these various forces that operate on us. Gravity is certainly one, yeah. But we got a couple of others. I mean, one is the upward push of the surface we're on, and
right.
then there's electromagnetic stuff and heat and atmospheric pressure and all the rest. That the system in which we exist on our planet is actually perfect for us as human beings to move about, but there is that balance issue there is definitely a possibility you will fall flat on your face,
yeah,
and that's scary for good reason.
Yeah.
But I think if you acknowledge these forces and understand them a little bit, that they in fact are our structure, and those forces combined are perfect for us on this planet.
Yeah. Oh,
we're living in a system that's actually quite supportive of us.
Right. Or we wouldn't be here.
Our lives would be shortened dramatically.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anything else you want to add before we bring this to a close?
No, I think that's it. I mean, I think you said, you know, we're in the right place.
We're here.
We have tremendous depths that are there for
yeah.
us, that sometimes
yeah.
it's tough to access those depths. And I think the Alexander teacher is there to help you as the student get to those depths as you change and evolve and embrace the change. You know, it's just, it's a wonderful thing. I'm going to post a video. We didn't talk about that. You can look really easily, but do this in your mind. Think about how it's different the way a toddler runs and a 65-year-old person runs. Mm-hmm. Watch how they move. You know, I'll post a video and Robert will get you the link to that. And I think that's the world of the Alexander technique. And we have that toddler movement still inside of us. And yep. we want to find it in a more mature person.
Right. Well, we have the mature version of the toddler movement there, right?
Well, we have what it has been sort of built onto it.
Right.
But I think we have the purity of it still as mm-hmm. well.
Okay.
Let me take one more minute. Sorry.
Sure.
I had a dream. Part of this, I had a dream, right? I dreamed I was playing basketball. And I was my current age, you know, and all of a sudden in this dream, I switched back to when I was in my early 20s, and I was just zipping around, right? Then I switched back to now, thud. And then I switched back to my 20s. So those movements, they're still there. And if we mm-hmm. can get to them now that we're far more experienced, it makes life just a lot of fun. So, you know, go for it.
So I will be putting a link to that video by the YouTube video, and also when this becomes a podcast, the same thing. And I'm also going to put a link to an article, a fairly lengthy article you wrote, basically covering what we talked about, and I think a bit more, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more detail in
that article. And so I think that brings us to a close. My guest today has been Bob Leda, an Alexander Technique teacher in the Boston area. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Robert, and thanks for all the work that you do too, man. I mean, it's just phenomenal for our community. So, you know, pat yourself on the back.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Okay. All right. See you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.